Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I am Dr. Cornelia Graves, the Maternal Medical Director, a maternal fetal medicine specialist, and the co-leader of the TIPQC Cardiac Conditions and OB Care. Today's discussion will be centered around the physiology of the heart and the importance of cardiac care and screening. We are so grateful to have with us today Dr. Diana Wolf. Dr. Wolf has a dual academic appointment at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. She is both the professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Women's Health, Division of Maternal Fetal Medicine, and a professor in the Department of Medicine, Division of Cardiology. She established the Maternal Fetal Medicine Cardiology Joint Program at Einstein Montefiore Medical Center in 2015 in response to the rising contribution of cardiovascular-related morbidity and mortality in pregnancy. She is the co-editor of the book Cardio-Obstetrics. She is the member of the Quality Improvement Initiative to develop the Alliance for Innovation in Maternal Health, AIM, Safety Bundle on Cardiac Conditions in Obstetrical Care, COCC. She authored the change package for the Safety Bundle and is the co-chair of ACOG District 2 Cardiac Bundle Development. She is a faculty member of the largest group of specialists in the field of cardio obstetrics, cardiac problems in pregnancy, and international organization. She is a co-founder of the postgraduate course at the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine titled Cardio Obstetrics, where fellows and faculty share their passions, interests, and challenges in cardio obstetrics. So, Dr. Wolf, we are so honored to have you joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Dr. Graves, for your kind introduction. It is a real pleasure to be here with you and, with our audience here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we know that you're a pioneer in some of the work in cardio-obstetrics. So can you kind of give us a recap of the work that you do on pregnancy and heart conditions?
Definitely. Really, it all started during my fellowship training. When I was a fellow, this was in Los Angeles, and once a month, the cardiology fellow, along with their attending, would roll in this big machine that to us looked like a school bus. And we would see patients, pregnant patients with known heart conditions, and we would sit around this small table and go over drawings. And I had so many aha moments of understanding the complication of cardiac physiology and then application to pregnancy. Still to this day, now that's over 10 years later, almost 15 years later, I still have those aha moments because the complication of cases that we see where I am and all over the country, there's just more volume. We're learning so much as we go along, and every case can be different. So, that's sort of where it all started. And then when I was an attending during my first week on service, I encountered a very young patient, a 21-year-old who was in heart failure at 10 weeks. And I started this conversation with a cardiologist who was also fresh out of fellowship. And I mentioned to her what I had done in fellowship and over, it took us 2 years, but we decided that perhaps we should start seeing patients together. Mm-hmm. And that all began in 2015. And the, you know, the referrals that we get have just grown, you know, probably multiplied by 10. But what's interesting is, you know, the number of congenital patients has remained about the same over the years, the number of cardiomyopathy patients the same, valvular. What's really grown are the patients who have symptoms and who are at risk, the ones who come into pregnancy, and then we identify some kind of risk factor or symptom, and they require evaluation.
Do you think that increase in patients presenting with symptoms has to do with increased awareness? You know, in the past, when people had shortness of breath or swelling in their legs, people often discounted that as a just being a part of being pregnant. So do you think that some of this may be because we're getting the message out that while it may be a part of being pregnant, evaluation should occur?
Absolutely. I do believe that that is true. Definitely, you know, this whole field, what we now call cardio obstetrics, in the past, these patients have existed all along. In the 1980s, 1990s, you know, this is not new. But what has changed is that stakeholders have really mobilized resources and knowledge to put the word out there to patients and clinicians that cardiac disease is one of the top causes of maternal morbidity and unfortunately mortality. While we see a rise in our country of cases, there's a huge concern and need to do something about this. And therefore, along with the California Quality Care, Maternal Quality Care Collaborative algorithm that you and I are both involved with, that has certainly raised awareness, but also just many different centers around the country and mortality review committees have really brought the message out to all of us, not just at the MD level, but I think at all inceptions of care for the care team and also to the patients, most importantly.
Well, you know, that brings up a really important question. Why and when is it important to screen for cardiac issues in pregnancy? Patients often say, I have so much on my plate. You know, I don't want to have any unnecessary screenings. I just want to, you know, enjoy my pregnancy, hopefully have nothing go on. So why is it important for us and why? And then when should we be doing this type of screening?
That's a great question. I mean, I'll tell you what I think. I believe that basically at every prenatal visit, we should be screening for symptoms. And the patients who might have screened positive and are already getting a, you know, workup, that's a different story. And the ones with the known heart disease, you know, we're already on the lookout with them. But the patients who don't have risk factors and who don't have symptoms or abnormal vital signs, they are the larger sort of low-risk population. And these are the ones, these are the needles in the haystack that we need to identify before they deliver to assure safe delivery. And these are the patients that I believe we need to screen constantly because things can change. We, you and I, especially as OBGYNs, as maternal fetal medicine specialists, we know what happens normally in pregnancy with that increased cardiac output and how that changes, how that impacts, how that creates a stress test for the maternal heart. And also, so that's what I would say in pregnancy. And then also in the immediate postpartum period, even when these patients are in the hospital and they deliver, we have interns and physician's assistants doing the postpartum rounds on our low-risk population. These are the patients that we need to screen. These are the ones who we don't know about, who haven't declared themselves yet, and hopefully never do. But the only way we're going to know is if we ask. So that's sort of my two cents. The CMQCC, the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative algorithm, recommends that these patients are screened at least at their first prenatal visit. And you can repeat, if they screen negative, you can repeat the screen at any time, even in the postpartum period.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I think the postpartum period, we're going to talk a little bit about why that's so important. Last week, we had a patient come in. She then had a little bit of high blood pressure. She delivered, but she failed to tell her doctor that she had a tumor in childhood and had had chemotherapy. So right after delivery, she began to have some shortness of breath and got some fluid in her lungs. And sure enough, the patient's heart wasn't working as well as it should. And you know that one of the risk factors that we have on the screening tool is that exposure to chemotherapy. So can you talk a little bit about our changing patient population as well, which may necessitate increased screening?
Yes. First of all, thank you for sharing that story, because that's really important for people to know. You know, it's these little nuances of your childhood history that many people think might not be really important to tell their doctor, but actually they are. They can really impact. But anyhow, to answer your question, our population is changing because we know that, first of all, the babies who were born with congenital heart defects are surviving into reproductive age much more than in the past, because we're doing such a great job. Our cardiothoracic pediatric surgeons are fixing these lesions so well that these patients are living beyond their reproductive age. And these people become pregnant, and that makes up one portion. And, you know, the other is a rise in cardiometabolic disease in our U.S. population, a rise in obesity, rise in diabetes, hypertension, and these combination of comorbidities impact the heart, the kidneys. And we know that pregnancy is a stress test on at least both of those systems. In addition, patients, you know, like this story that you shared, children who have malignancies are surviving with new chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and they live to reproductive age. And oftentimes there's a, you know, there's sort of a lack of transition of care from pediatrics to adulthood. And oftentimes we're missing the counseling about contraception and reproductive life planning.
I think that is such an important point, because these patients, and this was not the first time I had a patient who had chemotherapy, who then did not really, you know, think that was an important point, but then after delivery had an issue. So one of my questions is, can we talk a little bit about postpartum? Because, you know, people really think my baby's out, it's all good. I think even some of us who are in healthcare think once the baby's out, it's all good. Can we talk a little bit about the interlink or the relationship, especially of postpartum hypertension and cardiovascular disease, especially cardiomyopathy, and those long-term implications?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that postpartum period is so critical. There's the immediate postpartum period, you know, the days after you deliver, when especially new moms or even moms where they're having their fifth child or whatnot, there is so much going on there, right? There's the lack of sleep. There's sometimes support in the home, sometimes not support in the home. There's postpartum blues, postpartum depression, which is very common. And you have a person who has just delivered and has this newborn who is so fragile, and they are so focused on that child who is hungry, wants to breastfeed, needs diaper changes and everything. And so often the patient is not attentive to what's going on with themselves. They may think, oh, I'm tired, I feel short of breath, I feel not well. Well, I'm taking care of my child and maybe my other children who might also be young. And so often in those, especially those first few days after giving birth, there's that huge adjustment. And if the patient doesn't have the support, if they don't have somebody else I really think that every postpartum patient should have a wife, meaning that they need a person. They need a person to look at them and say, you don't look right to me. You need to, let's check your blood pressure or whatnot. So there's that period that where also, you know, when you think about the physiology, let's just say you have a normal birth and you don't have any lesions going on. There's still major changes in volume and fluid shifts. And then you put on top of that a heart that's vulnerable. For example, we know that pregnancy-induced hypertension is very, very common in general. It affects 7% of the population, and it's even higher. I know that where I work in the Bronx, it's more like 20%. And it's higher in different high-risk areas of the country. And we know that preeclampsia is not just hypertension. We know that it sends off signals to the myocardium, to the heart muscle, and it makes the heart very vulnerable, very delicate. And some patients will develop heart failure. And if it's not recognized right away, if there's a delay in timing to diagnosis, those patients do worse. And those patients who do worse, what do I mean by that? These are the ones whose ejection fraction is much lower, and then their risk for arrhythmia, cardiac arrest, and death. And so that these kind of events happen within the days postpartum. And so we need to figure out how to capture those people. And then there's also patients who might develop pregnancy-induced hypertension weeks after delivery, and the same course of events may occur. You know, the standard of care right now is for patients to come to their 6-week postpartum visit, but perhaps, and sometimes they don't even come because they're too busy and they feel great and they think that nothing's wrong. But there's, you know, postpartum hypertension has a different pathophysiology than pregnancy-induced hypertension during pregnancy. And I know that Dr. Graves knows this. I'm sort of speaking to the audience here. The pregnancy-induced hypertension is thought to be vascular of origin, and the postpartum pregnancy-related hypertension is thought to be more metabolic. And we're just learning more and more about these diseases, but it can be very, very serious to the point of contributing to our huge burden of maternal mortality, which we know is more prevalent in the postpartum period.
Absolutely. I tell my patients that the way I describe how the heart has to function in pregnancy is you get on a treadmill and you have to stay up for 9 months. And each month, the treadmill, the incline goes up. And you think you're going to get off the treadmill in 9 months, and then you get a backpack to carry. And I think so often what people think about is that, like I said, the baby's out, but it can take up to 6 months for your heart to really go back to where it was before. And so therefore, many of the heart diseases that we see are really related more to that postpartum period. That being said, when we screen a pregnant woman and she comes up positive, regardless of trimester, what long-term follow-up does she need? And can you talk a little bit about something that's so near and dear to my heart, those long-term cardiometabolic risk factors that we need to be counseling patients about?
Yeah, great minds think alike, don't they? I mean, I think about this all the time. And if it were up to me, I think that these patients need to be followed every quarter, every 3 to 6 months. I know that when I ask the cardiologist, hey, you know, this patient has hypertension and their postpartum and their ejection fraction's like 53%. How often should they get echoes? And their answer is, well, we wouldn't follow with echoes. We would follow their symptoms. But in my mind, why? I don't want to wait for these patients to have symptoms. There's really no standard of care that outlines how frequently this kind of patient needs to be followed. And I think that that's something that, you know, people like you and I, Dr. Graves, and our colleagues really need to bring our thoughts together and figure out, because there's the long-term risk of premature death in these patients. You know, I'm talking death when these patients are in their 50s, 60s. I mean, you know, 60 is young. Mm-hmm. People should be living nowadays where we are in the world. Longevity is patients living to the 80s, 90s, right? We really need to figure out a way to prevent premature death in these patients. You know, we see something abnormal and just leaving it up to the PCP, the primary care doctor, to follow, or for the patient to develop symptoms, that's not okay with me. And I think about this a lot.
Well, you know, again, I have another story, because I think it's so important as we talk to our patients that are out there to understand. One of the things, I totally agree with you. Number one, a 35-year-old woman is going to be so well compensated, usually, that by the time she begins to have symptoms, there's going to be significant damage. So the shortness of breath and things of that nature are going to come later than it would in a 70-year-old person. And I think often we forget that. But another thing is that Dr. Stacy Davis and I, who worked together for a long time, who's a heart failure doctor, when we started working together, she would tell me these stories. And one of the stories she would say to me is like, you wouldn't believe who came in today. I have a woman and she's 53 years old in heart failure. The last time she had an encounter with the healthcare system is when she was 30. And by the way, all three of her pregnancies, she had preeclampsia. Mm. So there is clearly a link between hypertensive disorders of pregnancy and long-term heart care. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you think we should be doing in order to capture these women? Because to me, that's heartbreaking that she didn't have an encounter with the medical system for 20 years, and now she has a disease that is potentially life-threatening.
Yeah, no, it's we should be doing something differently than what we're doing now. The cardiology community, the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, these national and international organizations, they recognize that an adverse pregnancy outcome like preeclampsia is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. But if you look at all of their risk tools that have been developed for cardiovascular risk, it doesn't include adverse pregnancy outcome. It doesn't even include pregnancy history, but I think that in the future it will. And that's, I really believe that that's the direction where we need to go. There are all these scientific statements from the AHA and the ACC. They say that every pregnant patient who had gestational diabetes or preeclampsia should be seen by a cardiologist. And I always ask the cardiologists I work with, and, you know, and other people I see at conferences, are you guys ready, guys and gals, people, are you ready to see, do you realize the number of patients we're talking about? Because that's like 80% of the people that are pregnant in certain places of the country. But anyhow, so there's awareness. We know about this connection, but it hasn't been brought into practice. And so I think it's something that we need to work on. There, we need to have some kind of recommendation, some kind of protocol that's different than what the cardiologists recommend outside of pregnancy, because they have their protocols for when to repeat echoes, but that's outside of pregnancy. And I don't think I think that has to be modified for these patients, because there's something different about preeclampsia. It's not the same as other etiologies of heart failure.
And I think you bring up a very important point that I hope you can reiterate a little bit more to our patients. Why is it important to see a team? You spent a lot of time developing this cardio-obstetrics team. Why is it important for a patient who screens positive or has a history of cardiovascular disease to see a cardio-obstetrics team during her pregnancy?
Yeah, and thank you. That's very dear to my heart, literally. It's in the past, a patient would see the two teams separately, and oftentimes there are mixed messages. I think the importance of seeing the patient together is, number one, to discuss medications. What's safe in pregnancy? What's safe in the breastfeeding period? Oftentimes, non-OBGYNs will discontinue, what I mean is people outside of the OBGYN world will discontinue anti-seizure medication, hypertensive psychiatric medications because they're worried about the fetus and the development, but they're not thinking about mom's health. If mom's not healthy, then the fetus isn't healthy. And in the past, we categorized medications by category A, B, X. It's no longer how we go about things. We individualize medications and we look at the data in our databases like LACMED and ReproTox. But so that's just one part of it. The other is that it's very important to learn from our colleagues, the learning about the physiology of the heart. And then also on top of that, contributing what's happening in obstetrics, what's happening in the inside the uterus, and adding that layer to the conversation during the prenatal visits in preparation for the delivery. That's what, you know, that's sort of one arm. The other arm is the inpatient, the delivery planning and getting together your anesthesiologists, your labor and delivery nursing leadership, the labor and delivery staff and the MFM, and talking about the patient, the physiology, the anesthesia plan, what consults do we need when this patient comes onto the labor floor? What kind of lines do we need? What kind of monitoring? Most labor and delivery nurses are focused on the baby, the fetal monitor, and mom's vital signs. So oftentimes you need a second nurse in the room who's going to monitor mom's heart so that when that labor and delivery nurse has to run to the shoulder dystocia in the next room, that cardiac mom is not by herself waiting for the drama to resolve next door. And then there's also the plan, the postpartum plan. Some of these patients may not be okay to go to the mother and baby floor. Some of them, we really need continuous cardiac monitoring. And oftentimes we can do that on the labor floor for these patients so that mom and baby don't have to be separated. But some cases, they're really better off in the CICU for those immediate hours when there's the volume shifts. So I think that, over the years, my cardiology colleagues, I see them talking to our patients about contraception and preeclampsia. So they've learned something from me. And then I'll make suggestions. Oh, I think this patient probably needs such and such medication or such and such monitoring. And so we learn from each other. I didn't do a residency or a fellowship in cardiology. I'm not a cardiologist, but I've been exposed enough to understand at least to some degree the red flags, the severity, and what we can do on our labor floor and what we can't. And as such, we can develop a safe plan for delivery. And hopefully in the immediate postpartum period.
I think that's so important. I started my interest in cardio, what we now call cardio obstetrics. I actually kind of came out of my interest in critical care. And Keith Churchwell, who is now the president of the American Heart Association, and I, when we were at Vanderbilt, would take care of so many of these women. And back in the day, we used special lines that would let us look at the physiology of the mother. And you would just see all of these fluid shifts and changes in heart rate and things of that nature real time. So I think those things are very important that patients need to know that this is not, you're not your, 50-year-old mother. It is, these changes are very, after you deliver, you don't go back to being normal. These changes are very profound. I know that we're getting toward the end of our time, and we've talked a lot about preeclampsia, and we've talked a little bit about some of the concerns that women should have. But let's say I screen positive on the screening tool, but I feel fine. And right now in this country, there's this somewhat distrust of us as trying to over-medicalize things. Mm-hmm. Why is it important for you to, even if I feel fine, but if I screen positive or borderline, why is it so important that I still be screened and still be counseled regarding that screening?
Yeah. Interesting that you asked that question, because I just had a patient today who said to me, nobody explained why I'm here. Nobody told me why I needed an ultrasound in my heart. And anyhow, so that kind of makes me think of how to answer your question. So why is it important? It's important because we need to identify abnormal cardiac testing and we need to prepare for the delivery. That's number one. And we want the delivery to be safe. That's the first objective. The second objective is having an opportunity, this window of opportunity in pregnancy to, even if, you know, you screen positive, you come to see me and the cardiologist and we do an echocardiogram, an event monitor, a whole nine yards, and everything is completely normal, even though you screen positive, it allows an opportunity to educate and to talk about how to modify the health interconception and in between pregnancies or postpartum to optimize health before the next pregnancy, or if you're not going to have another pregnancy, to optimize health to prevent the cardiomyopathy in the 50s, to hopefully achieve longevity in life. And so it's a real opportunity for patient education and for optimization of health.
So, like I said, we are getting towards the end of the podcast. Is there anything else you want our patients to know and the people who are listening to this podcast to know about why it's so important to screen during pregnancy and why it's so important to actually pay attention to your heart?
Yeah, the message I'd like to convey is, you know, if you're so fortunate to have a healthcare team that cares so much about you during your pregnancy and afterwards, allow your healthcare team to provide some education, attention, and an extra appointment might mean a lifetime. And yeah, that's my message, I believe.
Absolutely. I always tell my patients, I feel like I can get anybody through delivery. But my goal is not just to get you through delivery, but get you through your child's high school graduation, your daughter's wedding, and the birth of your first grandchild, and all those very important life events. So it is so important. This is more than just about your pregnancy. This is about your life and how you live it after you give birth.
Very well said. I agree.
Well, we want to thank you so much for your time. I know that it is 1 hour later there for you than it is for me here. So we really appreciate you lending your voice to our podcast here in the state of Tennessee. And I am sure that the people who tune in will learn a lot about why cardiovascular health and screening in pregnancy is so important. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Graves. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org. That's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.